2. Chapman hits it high and deep, straightaway center field. Abreu at the wall, leaps into the air. He can't make the catch. Now we're off to the races. Biggio's coming to the plate. He's going to score, and the Blue Jays win it. The Blue Jays win it. Matt Chapman with an RBI triple that banks up the center field wall brings home Kevin Biggio. The Blue Jays walk it off on consecutive days.
Just as they planned it, 2 days in a row, the Blue Jays, after a 13-inning marathon, blow a ninth-inning lead in the finale of the series without their closer available, just to set up Matt Chapman to be the hero the next day. Welcome to Jays Talk Plus, going from 10 to 12 today. I'm Ben Shulman. He's Shoali, filling in for Blake Murphy, Jeff Azzopardi, Lance Kennedy, Jennifer Rolnick behind the scenes. We were covering the series on the pregame show on Fan 590 and the postgame show on Jays Talk. This, by the way, on Sportsnet 360, 590 The Fan, the Sportsnet Radio Network, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts. It was an interesting series, to say the least. The Blue Jays somehow had their most comfortable game in a 3-0 win on Friday and then eked out a sweep by the finest of margins the next 2 days.
Isn't it funny, Ben? We said this on the weekend that they don't ask how, they ask how many. And certainly now, 3 straight sweeps for the Blue Jays. They sweep the Royals, they get swept, and then sweep the Blue Jays. Pretty crazy. I almost feel like the game yesterday, Ben, I don't know if where you land on this, but yesterday's game almost felt like a microcosm of the entire season, essentially, right? You got some pretty good pitching that involved all pitchers involved, basically walking the tightrope from beginning to end, including Hyunjin Ryu, who I thought was good, if not great, but you know, you got a lot of tightrope walking from every pitcher in that game, right up to Eric Swanson at the very end. You got a very good defense, which started things off with Kevin Biggio on the first batter of the game. Biggio diving in right field to scoop a ball off the turf for the first out of the game to help out Hyunjin Ryu. A bunch of double plays. The offense was meh, kind of meh. And involving a game-tying home run being blasted opposite field by Rafael Devers, only to eke out a win in the bottom of the ninth inning. Like, that is basically, I feel like, what we've gotten from the Blue Jays essentially all year. So I guess it's kind of par for the course.
Yeah, I mean, even like Bo Bichette threw out Rafael Devers right at home. I thought Ryu was solid. You know, he ended up giving up a lot of traffic. The defense helped him. He pitched out of it, which is a credit to him. You know, he dealt with his own mess, but yeah, it was. It feels like, in a way, I think the last 2 days were a little crazier than usual, but it does feel like a game. The Blue Jays have 83 wins that they've won like 50 times this year, something like that. You know, like they just keep finding themselves in close games late with small leads or with ties. And at least, you know, credit to them. I think a lot of times earlier in the season, not that this was a good offensive series, it wasn't, but they would be, you know, maybe down a run like they were in game 2 late, and they just didn't have anything going, and they couldn't get back. They came back from 3 or 2 separate Boston leads in that second game, down 2-0 and then down 3-2 in extras. And they come back not from a Boston lead, but from a pretty emotional momentum swinging moment when Rafael Devers launches that home run off Eric Swanson. There were 2 strikes and 2 outs in that game with nobody on base. Like, that game was over. And Devers brought it back to life. But the Blue Jays, with a huge contribution from Matt Chapman, the day after he's pinch hit for at least what John Schneider said he thought was the first time in Chapman's career, driving in the guy who pinch hit for him in Kevin Biggio to win the series. It was a crazy series. And we do want to hear from you on just frankly how you feel about this baseball team. I mean, there are 12 games remaining in the season. The Blue Jays are 83-67, which is just about a pace of 90 wins.
Where's the time gone, Ben?
The time has flown by since you and I and Julia were in this studio talking about, is Dalton Varsho going to catch some games this year?
Right. Like, how many bases is Whit Merrifield going to steal?
Different guys are going to the World Baseball Classic. What's up? Like, the World Baseball Classic was this year. It feels like it was like
10
years
ago,
and years and years ago at this point.
Yeah, the whole the Trout-Otani moment and the World Baseball Classic feels like it was another lifetime.
It's like Jose Berríos is going to the World Baseball Classic, but he struggled last year. Is that going to be a problem? Clearly not. That's worked out pretty well. He'll start the final game of the Yankee series coming up against Gerrit Cole. That one will go on Thursday. Blue Jays off today, of course, but we do want to hear from you. 3 straight sweeps. The Blue Jays sweep the Kansas City Royals, admittedly a bad team. They get swept by the Texas Rangers, a very good team, and then they sweep the Boston Red Sox, who are kind of somewhere in the middle. So text in 590-590. You want to talk about the general feeling, what you think the playoff prospects are, how you feel about their upcoming 12 games against entirely AL East teams, the Yankees and the Rays, not the teams that had victimized them so much. I mean, even after they sweep Boston, sure, they should have won more games than they lost against Boston, but the entire AL East poor record thing pretty much hinges on the Baltimore Orioles at this point. They go 3-10 against the Orioles. They are a game under against the other three teams. 6-7 against the Red Sox, 3-4 against the Yankees, 3-4 against the Rays. I guess we'll start. How do you feel about the team right now, the playoff prospects and everything going forward with 12 games coming up against the AL East?
I don't think that my opinions have changed a lot, because ultimately, even though the Blue Jays did sweep the Red Sox, we did get a lot of what we were used to seeing over the course of the entire regular season. We got a lot of very good pitching. We got a lot of great bullpen relief work. We got some great defense, and we got some okay offense. Maybe even slightly below okay offense, depending on how you look at it, right? So I think that's probably enough to beat teams like the Yankees, even if I really do feel like the Yankees probably get up more for games against their own division than perhaps they do for other teams. I mean, the Yankees just lost to the Pirates. The Pirates yesterday. I mean, this is the Yankees that we are all used to seeing would never lose to the Pirates, or very infrequently lose to teams like the Pirates at the very least, because as we know in baseball, as we've all been scoreboard watching in the American League wildcard race over but certainly for the past entire season, but more so since the All-Star break, I would say, but as we know, anyone can beat anyone on any given night. I mean, the Mariners just got swept, I think, by the Dodgers. The Rangers, after sweeping the Blue Jays, get swept by, of all teams, the Cleveland Guardians in Cleveland.
Houston lost a series to the Kansas City Royals.
Yeah.
It's been a wild stretch, frankly.
So because of that, knowing that, I think I do feel as though I think you're not going to get a drastic change in how the Blue Jays will play. You're probably going to get a lot of low-scoring games between now and the end of the regular season. You're probably going to get a lot of 2-1 games or 3-2 games like yesterday, or a 4-3 game if we're lucky. So and you're hoping that a lot of those are wins. But you're definitely hoping that 12 games remaining, 6 of them against the New York Yankees, who are essentially the bottom of the American League East. And I mean, they are at the bottom. They're not one of the worst teams in baseball by record, certainly, even if they are a mediocre team this year by record wins and losses. So you hope in 6 games you get what? What's an acceptable record against the Yankees in 6 games? Like four out of six?
4-2 is like moderately acceptable. I don't think you can do 3-6 because then you're asking to win a majority of your Rays games.
Right.
You have 6 coming up against the Rays. And the Yankees actually have passed Boston now that the Blue Jays have dispatched them in these 3 games. But I don't think you can win 3 games. I think there's a chance you can get by on 4, but I think you want 5 wins, which is a tall order, because it might require beating Gerrit Cole. For as mediocre as the Yankees have been, he has been anything but. He is more than likely the Cy Young winner.
I would agree.
Almost entirely locked in at this point. He will go He'll go Thursday in the series finale, Blue Jays and Yankees. It's a really interesting schedule coming up. I mean, they beat the Rays in a series. They beat the Yankees in a series early in the season. They also had that stretch where they got, after sweeping Atlanta, and this is way back now, I think it's in May, where they only take 1 out of 4 from the Yankees and the Rays successively. They play them back-to-back. They won 2 out of those 6 games. So I think you at least need 4, but I think, if you win 5, then you can go 3-3 against the Rays and finish with 91 wins.
Man, 5 wins, though. That means you got to win 2 out of 3 in New York.
And then sweep them.
And then sweep them at home. I'm not saying it's impossible.
Or sweep them in New York.
That'd be even better. I will say, Herring, and we can talk to Emmanuel Barbari about this in the next hour.
Yes.
Your pal from WFAN. But it is always kind of like odd to hear, even when the Yankees lose, whether it's the Blue Jays or anyone else, but when they lose in New York, they still play New York, New York, which I always thought is like the strangest thing. They just don't play music after losses. It's just odd to me.
I will say, I believe, although I've only been to Citi Field one time, that the Mets also play New York, New York.
Really?
And although that's they are, funny. And I don't think they do it as frequently.
Okay.
So, I mean, correct me on the text line, 590-590 if I'm wrong. I think they do it if they win.
Okay.
And it's kind of like, you are in New York, but maybe just pick a different Sinatra song. Yeah, like I hate to break it to you, but you got there. You didn't get there second because the Yankees got there. You know, there have been the Dodgers and the Giants and stuff like that. But you got there second of the active teams in New York. So, yeah, I don't think New York.
My Empire State of Mind. That's a good one.
You know? Yeah, get a little, you know, get a little more modern with it. But I agree with you. I'm not sure that I feel super different about the team. I mean, in the 15-game stretch, they scored five or more runs 12 of those 15 games.
Right.
They actually were really hitting the ball. You know, they in one of their losses to Cleveland, they give up 10 runs. Like, they had some losses, you know, in the loss to Colorado, they give up 8 runs. It wasn't necessarily the offense that was struggling. But then you get back to this 7-game stretch against Texas and Boston, and even when you go 3-4 in it, the Blue Jays scored fewer than 2.5 runs in those games. And they are, you know, I see some people texting in something about Davis Schneider and stuff like that. We are going to talk about that. You mentioned Emmanuel Barbari coming up at 11:30 of CBS and WFAN. We will also talk to Caitlin McGrath of The Athletic, who covers the Blue Jays. It was a weird series for the Blue Jays. The offense was bad, but there were a couple things, and we are going to get into the negatives. But there were a couple weird positives that I want to get into.
Yeah, let's do it.
I saw someone reply to a Chris Black tweet today, looking at the last 15 games. Chris Black of Sportsnet was talking about the wins above replacement rankings in the second half and the fact that I think Springer, Bichette, Guerrero, oh, there was one more. I'm going to go look at it in a second. But those three were not in the top, like, eight in wins above replacement, and they were including pitchers, to be fair. It wasn't all position players. But someone replied with on-base percentage in the last 15 days. Cavan Biggio, according to this person's tweet, which they screenshotted numbers, so I feel pretty confident, 476 on-base percentage in the last 15 games. Ooh. You could flip a coin nearly and determine if Cavan Biggio is going to get on base or not over the last 2 weeks. He was massive all series, whether it was the base hit he came up with yesterday and ended up scoring the winning run, or the base hit he came up with in the ninth inning of game two and ended up scoring the tying run. And he had two hits yesterday, and he was also a factor in the Texas series, even though the Blue Jays offense was not necessarily chugging along all that much. He has, I think it was a slow build, but all of a sudden he has like burst through and is emerging as a guy that is way more important to the Blue Jays offensively than I think we ever expected.
Absolutely. And I mean, you're not wrong. And I think it's important to also mention that the defensive play has been excellent as well. I mean, and not only that he has played well on the bases, because I think he generally always has, but that he has done it at so many different positions. Like, he was in right yesterday. We've seen him play. And he has basically played at different times this season at first, second, and third. And I said this to you before, but at third base, particularly while Matt Chapman was out over the past, like, I know he was activated on Thursday. So prior to Thursday's game, when we would see Cavan Biggio at third, I mean, he might have been one of the guys that made me feel the most comfortable out of any of the other quote unquote other guys who got to play at third base. Cavan Biggio also made some great throws, some great defensive plays, whether it was the unassisted double play, stepping on the bag at third when a runner was advancing to the bag and then making the throw to first. He did that a couple of times. Another spectacular unassisted double play the week prior as well. So, albeit not at third, but the defensive stuff, adding what he has done on the bases to his offensive prowess in the last little while, it does make you feel good about if Biggio had to be given more playing time. And he has earned more playing time, certainly. I think a lot of these players, Davis Schneider did the same thing when he burst onto the scene against the Red Sox earlier in the season after the All-Star break. But, I mean, these guys are making the most what they've been given, and they're forcing John Schneider's hand to put them in the lineup more. And Biggio, I mean, he came through on Saturday. He came through again yesterday on the bases. Great base running by Biggio on the Matt Chapman game-winning hit that went off the wall.
Yeah, he kind of rounded second, but stayed just in case the leaping catch was made. He could have made it back, and he knew he was going to score.
Yeah, it was very heads up by him, and then he saw the ball fall on the ground and just took off.
He's quick.
He hit the afterburners, and it was not a close play. Like, the ball barely got back into the infield.
It was a show slide. He slid, but there was not even, they didn't even try to relay.
And then, like, you know what? He capped it off by kind of like hands to the side. Kiermaier jumps into his arms, like lifts him off the ground. It was great. So yeah, I can't give Cavan Biggio enough praise these days. He's been great. And after a beginning of the season, Ben, where we were thinking and fielding texts and calls from people who were saying Biggio should not be on the Blue Jays in 2024. I mean, that's completely out of the question now. He is absolutely going to be on this team. He's going to, I think he has some more arbiters coming up, but I mean, it's certainly going to be a question of just how much money he's getting in arbitration, not is he going to be a Blue Jay next year.
Yeah, I think the thought of like non-tendering him and just letting him go is not even remotely a discussion at this point. And to give him credit, I mean, few guys took more from the fan base, frankly. Like every time he struck out, Biggio started trending on Twitter, you know, or we would get texts about it. And people see that. I think players a lot of the time, at least some of them try not to read all this stuff, but like they own Twitter accounts. They're on the internet.
Right, right.
You know, they watch TV and a lot of them really like sports. So they watch sports-centric TV or baseball-centric TV. They see what's being said. And he just fought through all of that. He did have a good last couple of months, but it is really, really culminating right now. I hate to expose you. I'm going to slightly because of a text we got.
Sure, please.
And it exposes me too because I didn't realize it. No name and no location on this text. Please let us know your name and location. Would love to hear from you.
I see the text.
But the Mets should play Empire State of Mind. There is a literal lyric in that song where it's like Jay-Z's talking about wearing a Yankee cap a Yankee game. Mm. So I'm gonna pivot to the greatest album ever released by a New York rapper.
Okay.
Illmatic by Nas, which has New York State of Mind on it. And I'm going to go with that one. Interesting, though, from Jay-Z,
The text says, playing a song that has the lyrics about the Yankees would be better. Terrible take. You know what? That is a terrible take.
Yeah,
I completely forgot that that song has. I was like, Alicia Keys? That's a, she's saying, she says New York a bunch of times? That sounds great to me.
In defense of you, the Mets play in Queens. Jay-Z is from Brooklyn. Like, he could be geographically linked. This gets into kind of borough stuff. And, you know, I mean, the Yankees win a lot. So a lot of people just become Yankee fans.
Sure.
But it is kind of surprising. Like, Jay-Z's a Brooklyn Nets guy. You're usually kind of a Nets, Mets, Jets guy.
Islanders guy.
Or you're like a Knicks, Rangers, Giants, Yankees guy.
Right.
Some other texts. Steve from Stony Creek. Biggio is a must starter for the rest of the season and playoffs and hit fifth. Which, I mean, they did have him up around there. It's interesting. So I feel very secure that I would agree every time there's a right-handed starter on the mound, I want Kevin Biggio out there, which is the majority of games.
Yeah.
What do you think? And I can pull up Biggio's lefty numbers. They have not let him hit against lefties a lot.
No, they seem very comfortable letting Espinal hit against lefties. And Espinal's splits against lefties are good, but
his numbers are better than Biggio's against lefties.
And they seem very comfortable to let Espinal hit, and if they need to make a change, a straight swap, for example, with Espinal and Biggio, depending on, I guess, where Espinal is, right? But I just wouldn't mind seeing Biggio hit more, just generally speaking, more.
Yeah, I will say Biggio, in a very limited sample, but a little under 50 plate appearances, he is hitting for a significantly higher average against lefties, and he's getting on base more because he's hitting for that significantly higher average. He hasn't hit for as much power, and that is one thing that makes him valuable. He's coming up with more singles recently, which I think makes him more playable every day. But still, one of the reasons that he has value for this team is in limited samples, he has 19 extra base hits and 9 home runs. He only has 3 of those extra base hits off of left-handed pitching. Now, a lot of that has to do with the sample as well, but he slugs a little less against lefties. I wouldn't mind running him out against lefties, but I will say, even if you don't, there's the possibility, like most relievers are right-handed too, so you start Espinal, 5th or 6th inning, you pinch hit Biggio.
Yeah.
And I think he's really shown an ability to substitute into games and provide value, which is a really difficult thing to do. I'll grab his pinch hitter numbers in a second here, but it's very difficult to pinch hit effectively, and he seems to do it pretty well.
Yeah, it's a lot to ask of any player to come in off the bench cold, not necessarily being told that you're not going to play in any particular game, because I think a lot of these guys are ready to play at any time, but to be coming off the bench after not having necessarily been in the rhythm of the game up until that point, and then to come in and being asked to not only play but deliver in a big moment, which is why you pinch it for guys, but because you like a matchup, for example. And Biggio has done it pretty well. I think it speaks very well to his preparation, and he might we got in a text yesterday on Jay's Talk that he might not be the most talented player on the team, you know, vis-a-vis Bo Bichette or Vladimir Guerrero Jr. or anyone else, but he always comes 100% prepared, which I think is speaks well to just him as a player and his character certainly as well. But yeah, Biggio, and to the texter's point about batting fifth, I think it was Steve and Stony Creek. That sounds probably about right to me. If he's in the initial lineup construction, because yeah, we've talked about this before in the general sense that for the rest of the season, when Brandon Bell comes back, he's probably going to, against in certain matchups, he's going to bat in the top four. But the top
then
four,
maybe Biggio was like six.
Exactly. Yeah. And if that's the case, your top four, but without Belt right now, the top four is going to be essentially Springer, Bo, Vladdy, Davis Schneider. And if you have Biggio after that, that sounds good to me, given the way he's been playing. Because you do, I think, want, despite yesterday, you do want Biggio batting ahead of Chapman, Kirk, Varsho, and Kiermaier, essentially.
Yeah, I think so. And you can split up the lefties still 5-7-9 if you want to. They didn't do that yesterday because they had Heinemann in there. But Biggio's pinch hit numbers, by the way, 4-for-13 this year. That's a .308 average. Two home runs in the four hits that he's had. And just as a sub in general, so now counting further plate appearances and at-bats that he'd have in a game after pinch hitting, .286 hitter, .948 on base plus slugging. He has been really, really good when they bring him into games without starting, and now he's really improving in games that he is starting as well. So, you know, I think that there is certainly a lot of validity to getting him in there more, hitting him fifth. George from Toronto saying maybe the league has caught up to Schneider. We will talk about it. Davis Schneider 0 for his last 20.
Yeah.
I think Biggio and Espinal should split second, George from Toronto says. It is notable that Espinal has been hotter recently as well, and maybe that's part of a reason that you don't start Biggio against a lefty starter if you have a little more confidence in Santiago Espinal to go out there and produce.
The second base situation on this team fascinates me going forward, because it could really be anyone. It could be anyone's job. Like when Merrifield was hitting as hot as anyone in the league in the month of July, you kind of thought to yourself, boy, the mutual option for Merrifield next year, if they don't pick it up, maybe it makes sense to even just rip up the option, give him a slightly longer term deal, even if he is 35 or 36 or whatever, you want to bring him back next year, solidify the second base position, have him be around to teach the likes of Aurelvis Martinez and Addison Barger and Davis Schneider and so on. Have him be around those guys, because he's a savvy vet who can probably impart some wisdom to these younger rookies. And then his production cratered in August, coinciding with the arrival of Davis Babe Schneider. And you thought to yourself, boy, has Davis Schneider made Whit Merrifield, maybe not irrelevant, but has it changed the conversation as to what will happen at second base next year? And now, I don't think it's necessarily flipped back, because I don't think Whit Merrifield has gotten back to the July production, let's call it, Ben. But, I mean, it does make it feel like next year, of all the positions on this team, third base certainly as well, if you do believe that Matt Chapman is not going to be a Blue Jay next year.
Yeah.
But it does make that part of the infield kind of a question mark going forward, right? And not that we have to look too much past this season, obviously, but, I mean, even to George's point, you could do a number of things at second, even in these next 12 games, and I don't think any of them would be wrong, per se, right? If you wanted to make Biggio, you're going to give him more playing time, and he sees more time at second, and Davis Schneider sits a little more, is that wrong? I would say probably not at this point. Not as a punishment to Davis Schneider, but just you go with the hot hand at this point. The lineups have to be as malleable as possible between now and the end of the season.
I mean, that's what got Davis Schneider into the lineup
right.
a lot. Like,
yeah.
You have to, at this point in the year, I think in July, when it's like, okay, this guy's had a good week, you're not necessarily going to unseat a starter or something like
right.
that. But we saw Matt Chapman get pinch hit for, and that doesn't happen very often. And he showed why the next day with two doubles, including the walk-off hit. And at this point, you have to just say, who gives me the best chance to win in this game today? And we'll continue, especially with Caitlin, talking about Schneider, talking about Springer as well. Joe and Brampton asking, can Schneider pull a Fenway in the Bronx?
Oh,
that would be very interesting.
I'll take a couple of Yankee Stadium specials from Davis Schneider.
It's in some ways an easier ballpark to hit in, and in some ways not an easier ballpark to hit in.
Than Fenway? Or
yeah, Rogers I mean,
Center?
Fenway. Oh, it's both of them are definitely easier to hit in than Rogers Center, which is like a middle-of-the-pack park, it seems like, this season.
Right.
But Fenway has the high but close wall. The Bronx, especially in right field, it's close, but even in left, it's a low wall. So you can really, make some moves there for your guy that elevates like Schneider. But before we hit the break, Hisho Ali, I'm Ben Schulman, wanted to talk about the pitching and specifically one guy. I mean, the pitching has been good all season. Mm-hmm. We had mentioned, you know, Hyunjin Ryu was good yesterday. You got good starts coming from Jose Barrios, Chris Bassitt as well.
Ryu was fine. I'm not prepared to say good.
He put them in a position to win yesterday, right. and he's your fifth starter coming off Tommy John. So I think you take
it. I can roll with that.
I think you take it. But I think maybe the pitching star of the series, and this somewhat speaks to just how good Jordan Romano's been, that it's not him because he had a save and then a huge two-inning performance. Ooh. But Chad Green comes up with a massive, massive 13th inning and then ends up working the next day in the series finale and pitches an inning and a third, bridging all the way to Eric Swanson in the ninth inning. This is getting really interesting with Chad Green starting to emerge as another guy in the mix here for the seventh and eighth inning.
Yeah, Chad Green, given what he looked like, and I know a lot of people had raised eyebrows when he made his first appearance in what felt like a big blowout win over the Colorado Rockies, and it still ended up being a gigantic blowout win at Coors Field when he made his first appearance off TJ surgery, but he got hammered in that first appearance when he was still kind of feeling his way back. It almost felt like an extended rehab appearance given the score and so on, but they eventually pulled him. He was probably on a bit of a pitch count, too, if we're being honest. But they eventually
yanked
him.
25 pitches.
Yeah, and it was probably exactly 25 pitches. John Schneider said, all right, I've seen enough. You're done. Get the yank. And they closed it out basically immediately afterwards. But every appearance since then, Chad Green has been very, very good. Maybe there's been a three-run homer
in the Texas
series. So, and I mean, everyone got hit in the Texas series, right?
Yeah,
so
I'm not sure how to evaluate what happened in that demolition.
But boy, yesterday, he recorded his highest velo on a fastball in the past several years. And I think more than that, too, is just knowing that the actual physical stuff is coming back because TJ surgery is no joke. Even with today's medical advancements, it's not something you can take lightly by any means, especially for high-performance athletes. But you know, you look at what Chad Green's been able to do, especially when Eric Swanson was on the IL, and I know Swanson is obviously back now. Simber is not available, and Simber logged a lot of innings for this team last year. They've gone to a lot of different guys, but beyond the actual stuff from Chad Green, you also just know that Green has experience in that setup man role, even in a bit of a closer role as well. He has that experience and has pitched very well. So if you're looking at guys who, just not from a physical-only standpoint, from a mental aspect as well, can go in and handle that part of the game, knowing what it takes to get one big out in a one big situation, you probably feel pretty good having Chad Green in there just as much as anyone else. It's kind of funny because earlier in the year, I think we all kind of said, oh, well, when Chad Green returns to the bullpen, it's going to look even better. When Chad Green comes back, it's going to be great. And then he wasn't great immediately, and now it kind of is. It's kind of funny. Even though 12 games left in the regular season, I'm sure we will hear Chad Green's name called to put out some fires on the bases pretty often in these next couple of weeks.
Yeah, I mean, he's like, he just seems like a slow heart rate guy. He's pitched 280 games Major League Baseball and has a 3.25 ERA to show for it. He's closed double-digit games, logged almost 400 innings, struck out over 500 guys. He's got nasty stuff, and I think the velo you mentioned, too, is huge because at times in his rehab, it was like, okay, he looks good, but he's averaging like 94.5. And Chad Green, when he's full Chad Green and fully healthy, was like average 96 type of guy.
Yeah.
And he's still a little below that this season. I think he's a little closer to 95.5. But if he gets that fastball working, he's got a big breaking ball. Changeup works as well. He's really dangerous. So it'll be a lot of fun to see him coming up. I think our official text-in question is, how do you feel about the Blue Jays 3 sweeps in a row? But at the same time, I do want to hear what people think about Chad Green. He's got a funky contract. I won't get into all of it, but the Blue Jays could grab him for 3 more years for about $9 million, or if not, he could get a one-year option, which I think was in the range of $9 million as well, or they could grab him, if he declines that, for 2 more years for close to $11
million. It's a very complicated contract.
What, in general,
more than
though,
usual. More
yeah,
than
it's,
usual.
It's a outrageous. It's like the Julio Rodriguez contract.
Yes,
it's super convoluted, but in general, what are you interested in the Blue Jays doing for Chad Green coming up in the offseason? Would love to hear that. 590. A couple more quick hits here from the series before we end up hitting a break here and go a little bit more national and look at some of the teams the Blue Jays are competing with. Mm. A lot of people texting in relating our, you know, how many wins do the Blue Jays need to the other teams, which is super important. But, you know, it's I think a very solid series at the plate for Vladimir Guerrero Jr. You do get from both Bo and Vlad, to be fair, but from Vlad in a later stage, what was a base running gaffe. He fails to tag up on a fly ball where he could have advanced to third with just one out. The Blue Jays end up scoring anyway. Vlad, though, hits two homers in the series. Came up with a hard line drive single yesterday. Had three walks in game two of the series, too. And a couple really nifty defensive plays. Sliding catch, 3-6-3 double play. So, in general, just what's your feeling? I mean, kind of like the team, I don't think either of us are going to revolutionize our thoughts on Vladimir Guerrero Jr. at this stage in the season. There are 12 games left. But what's your feeling on the series overall for Vlad, which had a lot of good, but then, you know, a quite public bad thing as well that a lot of people, you know, text in and tweet about.
Yeah, the base running thing in extras, there were no extras yesterday, but on Saturday, got some people up in arms, definitely.
Yeah, it is unacceptable.
And it was not good.
There's no way around.
I'm not going to excuse it, definitely. But yeah, Vladdy, I mean, it's funny to think that at the end of the season, and this is a season overall where offense is just up league-wide, not certainly just for the Blue Jays, for every player in Major League Baseball.
It's true, but
well, you look across the league, and I think you are expecting a teensy bit more offensively from most players. And so when you compare Vladdy's season to what you expect from him, and then also even just the last year, which I think a lot of people already viewed as somewhat of a disappointment, but you know, he was around 30 home runs, around 100 RBI last year. There's a real chance he could still finish 2023 around 30 home runs.
28, maybe. I think he could get to 100 RBIs.
Yeah,
you know, 10 RBIs in 12 games would be good hitting, but it's not impossible.
It's not impossible.
If you get the home runs.
Yeah, he might get there without the home runs. He might finish at like 26 home runs and like 97 RBI, which is for player X is fine.
It's great for player X.
For Vladimir Guerrero Jr., less so, I would say.
Much less than
right? So, so knowing that, I still feel like no matter what happens, unless he hits a home run in every other game for the rest of the season, people will probably still view it as a disappointment, and I think probably rightly so. But I don't know. It does make me feel like with some changes in the offseason, I still feel optimistic about Vladdy, even if there is probably going to be a question mark about what he will look like going into 2024 from a performance standpoint, because again, like he's at worst the team's second most important position player right now, depending on how you feel about Bo, and Bo's in a bit of a slump as well since coming back off the IL. So I don't know. I expect more from him. I absolutely do. And it would be a great time for him to show up specifically in New York and at the Trop, because road trips through the American League East are never easy at the best of times, and the offense is still scuffling despite the sweep. So you do need more. It's a cliche, but cliches are that for a reason, because they usually have a bit of a kernel of truth in them, Ben. But you need more from your biggest bats, and you didn't get a lot from any of George Springer, Bo Bichette, or Vladdy, or from those two in the series. You did get more from Vladdy.
Yeah, Vladdy had a good offensive series.
So you just want to see that stay. And you need some more from those other two guys.
Rod from Woodstock, by the way, was the one texted in about some Vladdy base running. Another text, no name and location. Leave us your name and location. Yeah. We'd love to shout you out. Yeah. But to be honest, not yet sold on Chad Green. Hopefully he uses the rest of the season well to audition for the next 2 years. I mean, I think that's totally
fair.
At the same time, he's made 7 appearances. Yeah. And his
small
ERA is still pretty gaudy. So I think that it's totally fair to not yet be sold on him. I think some of what helps me lean more into him is just the previous things that he's done in the Bronx for a large portion of his career. But I would say that it's absolutely reasonable to ask for some more.
If he plays, and he probably will, in the next 3 games, at some point, does he get applause?
So it's weird. Like, he was a setup man.
Right.
You know, and this is probably more of an issue with the people who view and watch the game than the game. A setup man is one of the most important guys on the team.
Sure. Yeah, that's what I mean.
Absolutely. So you'd think, like, has played 250 games, was part of major playoff runs and stuff like that, and pitched in over 250 games.
Yeah.
Not a position player. You'd think that guy would get, like, a video board. But relievers just, you know, if that's a starter,
like,
and they wouldn't have 250,
relievers.
But if you start like 80 games for a team and you're really good, you got a shot, you know, at getting some sort of compilation.
Did Aaron Hicks not get some kind of video when he returned? I think he did. If you're talking about who's more impactful to the Yankees,
he did, and they booed him during the video.
No. No, that's dumb.
Come on, New that's York. Rough. That's rough. Not nice. Like,
well, look, if Aaron Hicks is getting a video, Chad Green should get a video.
Yeah, so I don't think he will. I think he'll get, like, some light applause. I would hope.
A smattering of applause.
I mean, it's a very passionate baseball community. Yeah, sure. I would imagine that they recognize that, you know, Chad Green was a very important part of, yeah, of a lot of very, yeah, successful teams. So would hope going forward that he would get that kind of respect from them, because he put in, you know, to the chagrin of Blue Jays fans for a while, a lot of good work as a reliever for the Yankees. But that will be interesting. If he has a video, that would be kind of fun. Keep texting us, by the way, 590-590. How you feel about the team after three straight sweeps? A lot of people also chiming in about how many wins the Blue Jays, yes, need, they think, in the final 12 games, and relating that to Texas, to Houston, to Seattle. We're going to talk about all of that. I'll look a little bit around baseball. There's some interesting Rays news as well that we'll get to on the other side. He's Sho Ali. I'm Ben Schulman. Jeff Azzopardi, Lance Kennedy, and Jennifer Rolnick as well. This is Jays Talk Plus on Sportsnet 360. Wherever you get your podcasts, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and across the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Discussing the biggest stories that matter to Toronto sports fans. The Fan Morning Show with Ailish Forfar and Justin Cuthbert. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Jays Talk Plus on Sportsnet 360, 590 The Fan, across the Sportsnet Radio Network, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts. I'm Ben Schulman. He's Sho Ali, Jeff Azzopardi, Lance Kennedy, Jennifer Rolnick behind the scenes. We're taking you all the way until noon Eastern, filling in today for Blake Murphy, Caitlin McGrath of The Athletic, Blue Jays beat writer, and Emmanuel Barbari, host on WFAN in New York and CBS Sports Radio. Also call some games for the Yankees will join us at the half hour of the 11 o'clock hour. But for now, we continue talking about the Blue Jays, their race right now for the postseason. And we really want to get to your texts. We have, yes, been asking you to text in about how you feel about the Blue Jays, what you think you need from the Blue Jays in these final 12 games where they go New York, Tampa Bay, and then they come home and they go New York, Tampa Bay once again. And really appreciate, we're getting a lot in right now about what the Blue Jays need to do in this situation. So where do you want to start here? I mean, we have a lot of texts. Are there any that specifically have caught your eye here? I mean, there's one pretty thorough one here, I'll say, from Eric in Etobicoke.
Yes, I do want to get to that one for sure.
And he says, for what it's worth, since the Rangers play the Mariners seven times, which is huge, we'll delve more into that, and the Mariners play the Astros three times from here on out, even if all three of those teams sweep like every other series, I'm assuming he's saying, and then split the series where they play each other, the best they would all do in that situation is 91 wins for the Rangers and Mariners and 93 for Houston. And that assumes, again, that they sweep everyone else,
yes,
that they're playing. Like, Seattle opens up a series today with Oakland, but Houston opens up a series with Baltimore today. Yeah. Texas playing Boston. And then that it's as clean of an even split as you can get in the remainder of the games. That would mean that the Jays need to win 92 to be 100% guaranteed a playoff berth. For those who don't know, the Jays don't have the tiebreaker on Seattle or Texas in case of a tie.
They do with Houston,
which is notable. The Blue Jays are a game back of the Houston Astros right now, but they lead the AL West. So Eric saying here, 9-3 and in all cases would guarantee the Blue Jays get into the playoffs. If you don't assume that all those teams are going to sweep everyone, which I think is a fairly fair assumption,
agreed,
from Eric, then he says something like 7-5 is a pretty good bet that the Blue Jays could get in. 7-5 would get them to 90 wins. What, yeah, are your thoughts on that?
83 wins right now. That sounds about right to me. I have admittedly been saying down the stretch that I thought 91 wins or more would be what was necessary, but the way these teams are all beating up on each other might change that equation, right? And it's not to say that you would accept more losses from the Blue Jays. You just need them to win. Because there was another text here from, actually there's no name on this text, but the question was, if they make it, who would you guys like to see the Blue Jays play in the wild card, Rays or Orioles or the Twins? I mean, the answer to that question is the Twins, obviously, because
it's
the
not
Rays,
even close.
Yeah, and the Rays and Orioles are just a more dangerous team. You've seen them a lot.
Certainly not the
more.
Orioles. Yes. Not the, yes, Orioles. They are 10-3 against the Blue Jays this year.
Exactly, and the The matchup that is most likely, I think, because of tiebreakers and because the Rangers and Mariners play each other so much, is that the Blue Jays finish as a second wild card, just because the first wild card for any team not named the Rays or Orioles is out of the question now. Because there's still, even though the Rays and Orioles, I guess, split their four-game series, it means the Rays enter today two games back of the Orioles. So there's still some leeway there for the division to change, but it certainly feels like it is now that that series is done, it is now the Orioles to lose when it comes to taking the American League East, yeah, which would just put the Rays in the first wild card spot because they have way more wins than literally anyone else.
They're nine and a half up on, yeah, on
so
Texas.
It's not going to change for anyone else. So the Rays are just probably locked into that number one wild card spot. So that would essentially mean if the Jays finish number two, you're going to have a three-game wild card series at the Trop, which I know no one really wants any part of. But to answer the Texas question, yes, you want to see a matchup with the Twins, but just knowing that so many things, Ben, come down to, oh, like, will the Rangers win? Will the Mariners win? Will the Astros win? Who are they playing? When are they playing? Who's pitching? You just need, at this point, need to win just as many games as humanly possible and not kind of, I don't want, tiptoe's not the right word, but not kerfuffle around if we lose this game, you can win this game. You don't want to really mess around with that kind of stuff.
No, you go out and you do your business, and the Blue Jays are dealt a good hand,
yeah,
in the fact that the Rangers and the Mariners play each other so much. That is so important for the Blue Jays. As much as they face a tough schedule in their own division, 3-4 and 4-3 for the two teams respectively is the nightmare of the Blue Jays. Like, I think you're sitting there and you hope that Texas or Seattle pounds the other one. And the Texas Rangers are 5-1 this season against the Seattle Mariners. Ooh. And the runs scored are double for Texas that are for Seattle. Like, it has not been that close. So maybe I think you kind of just watch like game one of that series coming up on the weekend, and whoever wins, you're like, all right, win again, and then win again, and then win again, because split series are the enemy, I think, of that going on. Ben and Edmonton texting in. Only reason I think the Jays make it now, Vlad seems locked in. He does have 3 homers in the last 4 games, and Seattle or Texas will take the other out, playing each other 7 times. Like, I think that is, you can't understate what's going on with the schedule with those two teams. Norm from Toronto, they'd have to go 8-4, even less if Seattle or Texas lose to other teams.
Yeah.
And it is entirely possible that, you know, the Texas Rangers probably have a fire under them after getting swept. Just because the Boston Red Sox aren't in it doesn't mean they want to go get swept by the Texas Rangers for back-to-back sweeps either. Not to mention they were dominated, Boston was, by the Yankees in the series before. So they certainly want to do it.
There's one here that, yeah, says, there's no name on this one either. They probably won't need 91 wins to make the playoffs. 89 should do it the way Seattle and Texas are playing, feeling pretty good about their chances. Mike in Saskatoon says, over the weekend, there were 12 games that truly mattered for the Blue Jays. 11 of them went in the Jays' favor. This gift likely won't come again, so let's not squander the opportunity given, which I think is a valid point. I mean, like, yeah, how often are you going to expect the Dodgers, like, if you're in a 3-game series, the Dodgers to sweep the Mariners, the Astros to lose 2 of 3 to the
Kansas
Royals
City,
and who did the Rangers? Well, the Guardians,
they
got swept by the Guardians. Yeah. Like, how he's Mike is right. You can't expect that. Like, the probability of that happening is so low. We talked about this before,
like,
those games.
If I do quick
yesterday
and dirty math, I think it's like, it's somewhere in like the 1 in 2,000 range, like, legitimately. Like, if you assume every game's 50-50,
right,
and,
right,
it's not.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, like, you're expecting the Dodgers to go beat the Mariners, but then they sit Betts, Freeman, and Muncy and sweep them with like Jason Hayward's career day as a Dodger, at least.
Right, right.
Very good career for him. But it's, you know, I think that is definitely something to look out for going forward. Got a text here, no name and no location. The Jays can't win any games of real importance. They fall apart when they're up against teams that actually matter. I mean, I would argue that the games they played this weekend
were
of real importance, yeah, for sure.
All these games are important.
Yeah, they certainly did not play well against Texas,
no,
in both series.
They
split the Seattle 3-3, and they beat Houston. It's just a long time ago, and I understand that people don't think about that, but they beat Houston,
yeah,
in the season series by, I believe, beating them in both series that they played them, and the Houston Astros are...
Yeah, the 3-4 against the Astros at the Rogers Center, and the one they did not take was the one where Alec Manoah let up a grand slam in the first inning, so...
Yeah, those were big games. They, yeah, they've been dominating in game one, and they,
yeah,
won 3 in a row, so, you know, it is definitely an interesting thing to see. The 89 wins, you know... It's interesting. We got a text too from Zach from Fredericton. What's the minimum amount of wins the Jays need? If the Jays go 6-6, Seattle has to go 8-5 to tie.
Yeah.
So, right. You know, and he said, let's hope Texas takes 6 of 7. LOL. I think that is the hope. I appreciate the laugh out loud in there. Yes. But I think that is the hope for a lot of people, given that, Texas is getting healthier. If anything, Josh Young potentially could return. And I just think Texas is a much more talented team than Seattle. Seattle had one outrageous month, but they have been bad in the month of September.
I mean, that month for Seattle involved Julio Rodriguez setting or breaking records that had not been matched since like the year 1900.
And they broke their own records too. And they are not a young franchise at this point, but they went 21-6 in August. They've gone 5-11 to start September. So I would probably say that my bets are more in the favor of Texas and against Seattle. I think it's possible to make it with 89 wins. I do. It makes me nervous though, because of the tiebreakers.
I would agree, yes. Because you already lost the tiebreakers to Seattle and Texas. So
you would need both of them to win at least 89 games.
Right.
But I don't think that that's impossible, because Seattle has this series coming up with the Athletics. Then again, you probably then need Seattle to beat Houston in a series if Texas is going to play well enough against the Mariners to get to 89 wins themselves, and Seattle is going to manage. And then maybe Houston's back in the fold. So it is such a mess, I have to admit. It's a huge mess.
It seems pretty likely that the last series of the regular season against the Rays at the Rogers Center, Fan Appreciation Weekend down at the Dome, is going to matter a lot. I'm sure there's a chance that entering that series, things have been clinched and it matters less, definitely. Or there's a chance that after game one of the series, just based on how the other teams are playing, it might not matter. But it does somewhat feel like, what might end up happening is that on Sunday, October 1st, we're scoreboard watching when all the games start at the same time, just to see what happens. Just like we did in 2021, when the Blue Jays were awaiting the results of Yankees and Red Sox playing. I forget who they were playing. I think the Rays and Nationals, I want to say, is who they were playing.
And it was even the Mariners who finished a game back of the Blue Jays. Really tight.
There was a text here from Scott who says, from Oro, I believe, who says, the main thing is to make the postseason and anything can happen. Wins are important, not how you get there. And I couldn't agree more with that text.
Especially at this point in the year.
Yes, because certainly, or if we were talking earlier in the year, quality of win certainly matters because you want to see the process be a little bit better and you want to see the offense perform better. I'm by no means excusing the negative things for the team that has happened over the large part of the entire season. But at this point in the year, 12 games left, just win and you get in. You and I discussed this before, the idea of like what it means to deserve to make the playoffs. I truly believe, like I've always believed this, and this is not just limited to baseball, but for all sports, if you make the playoffs, mathematically make the playoffs, you deserve to make it, because that means you won enough games to make the playoffs.
That's how it works. That's why they set it up that way.
Like, doesn't matter if the Jays played poorly offensively. Like, it does matter because you want to see them just hit better because you feel like they can. But it is more just, if you win enough games to get in, no matter what other teams do, you did deserve to make it. And I've said this to you many times, and I know Caleb has said this. Caleb Joseph, of course, has said this many times as well, as a former player. And a lot of our colleagues who are former players, I think, have shared this sentiment. But you play 162 games, Ben, for a chance to effectively roll the dice. Nothing is guaranteed in the postseason. Atlanta and and Baltimore are both going on wild tears this season, maybe more than some expected for some of these teams.
Especially Baltimore. I don't think anyone predicted
that. There's no guarantee these two teams do anything. I know a lot of people are kind of like penciling in Atlanta for the World Series. It's not a given, right?
I mean, when they won the World Series, they won 88 games. Yeah. The Dodgers had won over 100. Like if the regular season mattered that much in the playoffs, the Dodgers would be like 7-time World Series champions in the last 11 years. They just clinched their 10th division title in 11 years. And the one year they didn't win the division, they still won 106 games. Like it was just a crazy year for the Giants. So you never really know. A couple more minutes. We'll break around 11 o'clock. He's Sho Ali. I'm Ben Schulman. A lot of just general text now about so we can hit on it. No name and location, but someone saying maybe the Orioles will do the Blue Jays a favor and sweep the Astros this week. Still so much up in the air. It is huge, I think, that the Rays won two games in that series, which means that the Orioles still have something to play for, which is absolutely massive. Scott from Oro texted in, the Jays have not succeeded against teams above 500. So in a sense, that is true. I think there are some ways to look at it. But raw numbers, the Blue Jays are 38-43 against teams above 500, which is not fantastic. I mean, a lot of teams are not far above 500 against teams that are above 500. The Rangers are 40-40. The Phillies, who are going to make the playoffs, are 42-44. You look at Seattle, they're much worse at 33-42. And this is, you know, this is cookie cutting it. But the Blue Jays against not the Baltimore Orioles are five games, or pardon me, they are, so they're, yeah, they're seven games below 500 against the Orioles.
Okay.
So they'd be two games above 500 against those good teams that aren't the Baltimore Orioles.
Right.
They have been absolutely victimized this season by the Baltimore Orioles. That's not to excuse it for them, but I don't necessarily look at that, at least personally, as much when you go up against a team like the Yankees, let's say, who first is a lot closer to 500 and is just in a different caliber. Even if they're the Yankees, the Blue Jays certainly should give them all the respect in the world. They are not an easy team to beat any year. Although, you know, they are about as bad this year as they have been in about 30 seasons. But it's a different caliber of team than the Baltimore Orioles.
Right.
It's just a different beast.
I do want to get to some of these. I know we got to go, Ben. But
yeah. Well, we got 5 minutes.
Well, I do want to get to these two texts. Troy and Woodstock.
Or maybe a couple minutes.
And Kevin and Ajax asking about the setup for the rotation for a wild card series. And I know that's definitely looking ahead a teensy bit. But I always have enjoyed the conversation of who, like, how you set up your rotation for a playoff series, like who makes it, who's on the playoff roster. Those questions are always very fun. Obviously, you want to limit that conversation because I don't want to be counting the chickens before they hatch necessarily. But Troy and Woodstock, Ben, who starts for you for the Blue Jays if they make it as a second wild card? Kevin and Ajax, if the Jays go to the Trop, what's the ideal setup for the rotation in a wild card round? I wonder. I know a lot of people have had this question all season long. It kind of feels as though, you know, like Gausman, Berríos,
and then
Kikuchi or
but
Bassett,
you could
maybe
fill in the blanks there. Yeah, I think it is interesting, and I have heard at least a little bit, and a little bit more recently, what about using Ryu? Because Kikuchi could go to the pen. Ryu is as playoff experienced as you're going to find a guy in this rotation. He was with the Dodgers,
and
for
he's pitched
of those
largely very well
players. Yeah, and in the playoffs, you're not necessarily looking for long starts a lot of the time. Yeah. Anyway, if you have a guy like Kevin Gausman going, you'll probably have more bullpen available for someone like Ryu. So it is interesting. When you look at the Tampa Bay Rays, they are more righty-heavy than the Minnesota Twins, at least.
Sure.
The Minnesota Twins have a lot of left-handed hitters, a lot of switch hitters. If they end up playing the Twins, no doubt in my mind that they should go to one of Kikuchi or Ryu. They could piggyback them if they want, or they could just go to Kikuchi if they want. Because there's so many lefties, both of those guys do quite well, especially Kikuchi against left-handed hitting. The Rays, I mean, there are lefties. There is Josh Lowe, there is Luke Rayleigh, there is Brandon Lau. But you also have Yandy Diaz, Randy Arozarena, Isak Paredes, like really important right-handed bats in that lineup. And Chris Bassett has really dominated right-handed hitting all season. He has just shut them down. So I wonder if the matchup could play into it. I think if it's X opponent, blank opponent, I might lean Kikuchi.
Mm-hmm.
But if you tell me an opponent's going to put a righty-heavy lineup out there or is going to make themselves worse to put more lefties out there against someone like Chris Bassett, it is interesting in my mind about using him in that situation.
Yeah, I think when we were having this discussion about a month ago, I'm not sure Bassett was 100% in that conversation, but I mean, he has pitched so well recently, maybe a couple blips here and there, but what pitcher in September has not had blips? Because it's the end of the season, a long season, a lot of fatigue for a lot of these guys who are hurling well over 150 innings. In Bassett's case, he's at least entering yesterday's game, because I'm not sure if any of the guys above him pitched yesterday, but he was top five in innings pitched, and he's pitched largely very well in terms of quality of innings pitched. So I think you're right. I think the matchup might determine it. If it ends up being a Twins lineup, I'm not sure Bassett is that guy, but you know what? If it is the Rays, then I might lean it. I kind of agree with you.
Chris Bassett remains third in the American League in innings pitched, only behind Framber Valdez of Houston and Garrett Cole of the New York Yankees. And we'll end off with this one as we hit a break here. TJ and Stouffville, whatever happens, let's hope we aren't watching another team decide our fate like in 2021. We'll see what the Blue Jays can do coming up against the Yankees tomorrow as they start a 3-game set. To talk about that more, we are going to have Caitlin McGrath, Blue Jays beat writer for The Athletic, coming up on the other side. He's Sho Ali. I'm Ben Schulman. This is Jays Talk Plus on Sportsnet 360, wherever you get your podcasts and across the Sportsnet radio network.
Diving deep into Leafs, Raptors, Jays, and NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Jays Talk Plus, or welcome back on the Sportsnet Radio Network, Sportsnet 360, 590 The Fan, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Second hour of the show taking you until noon Eastern. I'm Ben Schulman, he's Sho Ali, Lance Kennedy, Jeff Azzopardi, Jennifer Rolnick as well. Filling in today for Blake Murphy, off day for the Blue Jays. They will start a series in the Bronx against the Yankees, a three-game set coming up tomorrow. 7:05 first pitch, Yusei Kikuchi against Clark Schmidt, and you can hear all that pregame coverage with Blair and Barker and postgame coverage on Jays Talk coming up on the Sportsnet Radio Network tomorrow and for the rest of the season. It should be a really, really interesting stretch coming up for the Blue Jays. They have Yankees, Rays. And to give us a bit of a better feel about it, we are happy to welcome in Caitlin McGrath calling into the show, Blue Jays beat writer for The Athletic. Caitlin, really appreciate it. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Doing well. It's been a topsy-turvy week. The Blue Jays sweep Kansas City. Then they get swept by Texas. Then they end up sweeping the Boston Red Sox. You have the benefit of being around the team pretty much, if not every single day. You're going to be on the road trip as well. Just what's the feeling been like from series to series as they go from some pretty high highs to low lows and back to the mountaintop again?
Yeah, I will say this Blue Jays group is pretty good at sort of riding the wave that is the sport of baseball. I know that it's kind of a cliche. You hear them say it a lot about, like, you know, every day it's a fresh new day and you just got to put the last one behind you and stuff. And they had been saying that a lot throughout that Texas series. And but I would say, like, even coming into the clubhouse, like during that Texas series, like, you know, it wasn't like a party in there by any means. And certainly in post game, it wasn't a party as they're losing those games big. But I would say, like, with each new day, everyone came in, did their work, looked like everyone had a pretty good attitude. Like, it didn't, you know, it didn't totally feel like, oh, this team, like, thinks they're out of it or something like that. I thought that everybody, I think John Schneider said this yesterday when I asked him about it. He described it as all the guys stayed loose. And I would agree with that. I think that the vibe didn't seem that much different to me from, like, September or how it would look in, like, April or May or June, you know? Like, I thought that this Blue Jays group in particular is pretty good at honestly putting those bad ones behind them fairly quickly. And, you know, I'll be the first to say, like, I really questioned after the Texas series if they could, you know, it wasn't like that series ended their season by any means. It's so close in the standings and so close in the race that, of course, at that point, the Blue Jays were just like a game and a half back and there was so much, you know, more to play. But I just really question, like, can they get out of this hole? Like, can they find some momentum after that serious, you know, thumping that they took from the Texas Rangers? And they did, so credit to them, and they have to keep it going now in New York.
Do you attribute some of that to the Blue Jays' experience? I mean, they were one of the younger teams in baseball last year. They are, frankly, one of the older teams on the position player side in baseball this season. Do you think that that helps out in situations like this?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, they have some good veteran guys experience. Certainly someone like George Springer, for example, has had many September stretch runs that he's gone through. Matt Chapman as well, back with Oakland, definitely has gone through these sorts of races. I think the rotation is really, has a lot of veteran experience. And I even think some of the sort of younger guys have had plenty of experience now, like a guy like Bo Bichette, who kind of just is very naturally even keel. Bo doesn't tend to go too high or too low. He's sort of really steady. He's very good at staying steady. And I'm sure that he's kind of learned through the years, especially with these Blue Jays, you know, 2021 and 2022, especially those kind of September drives where one was successful and one was not. I think he's probably learned from that. And so, yeah, I think it's various levels of experience. Some of the guys that have had years and years of experience with other teams going through this and various levels of success going through it. But I think it's also some of the guys that we kind of still consider youngish on the team, but certainly have had enough experiences now, even just with this team alone in the last handful of years, to kind of know how to handle the highs and lows that come with September baseball.
Well, certainly, Caitlin, one of the highs yesterday was a walk-off of the second straight day. And it was interesting, right, because Chapman gets pinch hit for on Saturday. Kevin Biggio factors in a major way in extra innings, certainly as well, in place of Matt Chapman. And then the very next day, Chapman drives in the game-winning run in the bottom of the ninth inning, moments after the Jays blow a 2-1 lead. I wonder about Matt Chapman, because after such a strong start to the year where he basically hit like Ted Williams and he was one of the best players on planet Earth for the month of, well, I guess March was only one game, but March and April. And then he really came back on Earth. He struggled. He went on the IL. How much do you think you can expect from Matt Chapman in these final 12 games? He gets a big hit. He just looked so relieved in the post game with Arden yesterday. I wonder if that's something he can build on going forward.
Yeah, I mean, there's not a lot of time, but he kind of talked like that with us afterwards, too. And he said something along the lines of, when he hits a ball to the middle of the field that way, that's when he knows he's doing something good. And it's true. I mean, Matt Chapman has a lot of pull power, but he can go to, you know, opposite field and center field. And he did that a lot in April, if you remember. That was kind of what his success was in April, if I recall. It was like a lot of balls up the middle, hit hard. And so I think that it was definitely probably a relief for him. It's been a frustrating time for him, dealing with the injury, wanting to help the team, not being able to help the team. I mean, Matt is also a really team-first guy. And so even with his own personal struggles and, you know, an up-and-down year that he's had, I think all that matters to him is the team winning and contributing in any way that he can. And obviously, even though maybe the hitting hasn't been there as consistently as he wants it to be, the defense for the most part is there. I know, yesterday there was an error, but I think the hand or the finger's probably still a little bit tender there. So, but overall, like, you know, there's 2 weeks left in the season, and you know what? Guys can really kind of change the tenor of their year a little bit, I think, if they come up big. You even look at Vladdy. I know he has had a frustrating year as well, but having those two big home runs, or I guess three home runs, but two felt bigger than the one that they, you know, he hit and they still lost. But, you know, he's been big for them, and you kind of feel like if he can go into New York, and he likes to play in New York, he's hit there really well in the past, you kind of feel like if even Vlad can go in to New York and have a really good series, you sort of start to feel like, yeah, his season is going to be what it is. You know, it's not going to be like, it's not going to reach the high highs of 2021, but certainly you feel a lot better if he really carries the Blue Jays into the postseason.
Absolutely. That's Kayla McGrath of The Athletic talking with Ben Schulman and Shoa Lee on Jays Talk, plus Vladdy with 12 home runs in 34 games at Yankee Stadium in his career and an OPS near 1,000. We've seen the home runs. What do you think is contributing to at least that mini stretch there where Vlad just seems to be lifting the ball a lot better than he was before?
I think it's just like better pitch selection. I think that's always, well, there's a lot of things going on. And, you know, I'm not the expert on sort of the swing mechanics. And I know, you know, there's probably been a lot of, you know, Joe Siddle has been talking about it. And there's a lot of people that have been talking about it. You know, the swing mechanics are what they are. But I think that for him, success can also just come with hitting the right pitch and pitch selection and swinging at the right pitch and waiting for his pitch and doing all these things. And, you know, he is patient, and that was sort of his thing for a long time. And, you know, I remember 2021, for example, and even just earlier this season in April, like, I remember his pitch selection was really good, and he was taking his walks, and he was really just being selective with his swings. And I think that's really the key for him. I think when he gets out of his plan up there, when he's, you know, getting fooled by pitches off the plate or chasing sliders away, like those types of things, those are the bats that, you know, really doesn't look like himself. They can be really frustrating. And, you know, I get it. Hitting is really, really hard. I don't want to downplay that. Like, you know, he's not swinging at those because he thinks he can't hit him. He's swinging at them because he's fooled by them. But I just think, like, he is, you know, such a talented hitter. He has such great bat speed, and he can really turn on a pitch. And so it's really important for him to sort of just wait for those mistake pitches and get his timing right. And I think that that's kind of been the difference the last couple of days. And, you know, I think that he really wants to be the guy. He really wants to, like, step up in the moment. And I think that, you know, he was, I'm not feeling pressure, but certainly feeling like, you know, this is the time that I've really got to come through the last couple of days. And again, he's a real big team guy, and he's really into, like, watching the standings, and he's well aware of their situation and well aware of, like, you know, the Mariners are still playing the Rangers a bunch of times, and this has to happen, this has to happen. So he knows they're in it, and I think he kind of wants to help them lead the way.
Yeah, I vividly remember watching Vladdy in 2021 sit on the infield, just watching the giant Videotron at the Rogers Center when the Jays were trying to, were awaiting the result of, I think it was the Red Sox game and the Yankees game. Just one of those games had to go the Blue Jays' way, and neither of them did. And I just remember him, he was so into it. I know a lot of players would be, obviously, across many different sports, but it's just kind of funny because I totally agree with you, Caitlin. You know, one guy who has come through recently for the Blue Jays has been Kevin Biggio. And Kevin Biggio, Ben and I were talking in the first segment of the show about his play, certainly offensively, has come through many times recently, even in this past series against the Red Sox, playing very well defensively as well at basically four positions. He's played well in right, at first, second, and third. I wonder what your feeling on Biggio is these days. Ben had said earlier that any time, and again, short remainder of the season, just 12 games, but any time the Blue Jays face a right-handed pitcher going forward, and that's going to be a lot of the time, that Biggio should be in the lineup in some way, shape, or form, whether or not he's batting fifth or somewhere else, it's up to debate, depending on who else is in the lineup, certainly. But what is your take been on Kevin Biggio? He's played very well as of late.
Yeah, I think he just looks so calm and confident out there. I think that he's really this year embraced the role that the Blue Jays have for him. And I think that, you know, I could understand how it would take some time to sort of get used to playing sporadically, having to get used to different positions. You know, that is a role that is not easy. I think that maybe some guys make it look easier, but it's not. You know, you have to be sort of ready at all these different positions. You have to be ready to pinch hit sometimes and come into a big spot. And I think that he's just really thrived in that role this year, and he just seems very like calm and mature and collected and everything. And I've been really impressed with his play. I think defensively, even almost more so because of how he has to switch positions and stuff like that, you know, like playing third really, really well, and then going out in right field and looking great in right field too. I think that, you know, he's been really, really valuable to the Blue Jays. And honestly, like when their hitting has kind of sagged a little bit, you know, week to week sometimes, I think he's been a real constant for them, honestly, for the last couple of months at this point. Like, he's just been really, really good and really solid. And, you know, he's using the whole field a lot more. I think that he's kind of, you know, changed his swing path a little bit so he can drive the ball a little bit more. I think traditionally he's more of a fly ball hitter. So I've been really impressed with his play. And I would agree. Like, I think that, you know, at this point in the season, it's not about, you know, guys' feelings. It's not about equal playing time. It's about who can hit, who can help you, who is performing, and get them in there. And I think, you know, you go back to the pinch hit on Saturday with Matt Chapman in, I guess it was the ninth inning before Varsho came through with that triple. But, you know, that's a move that Schneider probably thought, like, you know, you're not making in June, right? Like, but, you know, that was the right move. Ultimately, it worked, and, you know, it looks a lot better because it worked. But Biggio's been swinging the bat really well, and Chapman was scuffling a little bit, and, you know, that's just the way it goes at this time of year. And so I would agree, especially with Brandon Bell out, you still have some flexibility with, like, the DH role. You can kind of cycle that around to Vlad or Springer, and then you can kind of put Biggio, whether it's in right or first or you know, another position too.
Last one for you here. Some guys that aren't hitting as hot recently. You have George Springer. He did snap his 0-for, but 1-for-20 in the last five games. Davis Schneider, 0-for-20 in his last five games. What's your concern level with each of those two guys?
Yeah, I mean, not much with George, just because, like, you know, he's had somewhat of a streaky year, but I think, you know, even before, he was great in the Royals series, then really kind of slowed down from there and hasn't been the same guy. But, you know, he's just so, you know, good. He's has a proven track record. It hasn't been, you know, quite at his career norms this season, but he's been a lot better in the second half. He's been a lot better sort of recently, these couple series not included, I guess. But I'm not worried about him. Davis, you know, he is young, and you always figured he'd have to come down to earth a little bit. And so that's the thing, like, what Davis is learning right now is that, yeah, you come into the league and you're really hot. And the thing is, like, He performed really, really well against Boston when he first saw them. And I'm sure they studied up on him and they realized, okay, this is what this guy was doing. So we're not going to pitch him like that. And of course, you know, this series, he didn't have as much success against Boston, kind of understandably so. Like, that's the game in the major leagues. Pitchers are going to adjust to you and you got to adjust back. And so he's learning that right now. One thing that I have heard about Davis that, manager John Schneider has said, and I think that, you know, even after that Boston series, I think he struggled a little bit. I think it was Cleveland maybe. And then he was able to make an adjustment. And so one thing that I think has impressed the Blue Jays about Davis is that he has been able to make fairly quick adjustments. So it's probably coming up on another time where he's going to go into New York. He has not faced New York. He has not seen Yankees pitching, but I'm sure they've seen video on him. So they're going to kind of be prepared. So it's just a matter of adjusting and having a good game plan. And, you know, at least his at bat continues to be good. I know he's struck out a few times and he struck out looking, but it feels like he still kind of has a plan up there and kind of knows what he's doing. It's just a kind of a matter of getting this pitch to hit. And he was hitting some balls hard too, which is, you know, always promising.
Yeah, definitely a little bit of bad luck. I think, you know, Adam Duvall made a nice catch on one in extra innings. But Caitlin, thanks so much for joining us today and have fun in New York.
I will. Thank you so much, guys.
That is Caitlin McGrath, Blue Jays beat writer for The Athletic. And yeah, Davis Schneider, I mean, there was always going to be a bit of a market correction.
Wait, his OPS wasn't going to be 1300 for the rest of the year?
Yeah, he was not, as they head into Yankee Stadium, he was not going to be like Mickey Mantle, Babe Ruth, and Joe DiMaggio combined. I mean, I'll bring up a name that I don't think you thought we'd ever talk about again, but we were on the Boston series when he debuted doing Jays Talk.
Right, that's
our guy Coker Triplett, who tied Davis Schneider for the most hits, I believe it was, in a first-ever series when Coker Triplett had 9. He went 0-22 for the rest of the season, did not have a hit, and didn't make the majors again for 3 years. Now, I'm not going to say that that's happening. Let me clearly say that's not going to happen. Although he did become a World Series champion, so maybe with the 1942 St. Louis Cardinals. Yeah, not the Browns.
Ooh.
St. Louis Cardinals, so interesting there over the New York Yankees. But there was, you know, there have been a lot of texts about Schneider.
Some
saying, you know, the league has figured him out, or has the league figured him out? I mean, I don't want to say, like, I think we probably say, like, the book is out a lot by people. And it's like, that's how sports work. You adjust and then they adjust, then you adjust and then they adjust. So I'm not saying that, like, he is solved. There was a text, I want to see if I can find it. It had to do with Schneider. Here it is. Doug from Port Dalhousie. So, is it possible Schneider's approach at the plate has been infected by the Jays analytics staff or
these
coaches?
Days.
Yeah. In analyzing his swing choices in the past 7 games, he's been indecisive on pitches in the zone. And I just want to make 3 quick points here. 2 of them especially quick because we talk about it a lot. Again, he wasn't going to be, like, part of the reason he's slumping is because he was so outrageously hot that regression to the mean was going to happen. The law of large numbers, the longer you hit, the more you're going to be yourself rather than short spurts where guys can do crazy things in 2 or 3 games because it's somewhat random. I think another point that I'll just make super quick, because at least it's my opinion, I've talked about it. There is possibly a change coming up with hitting staff. I don't know. It's the exact same hitting coach as it was last year when they were like a top 5 offense in baseball and the year before that. So I do sometimes wonder if that needs to be thought about when so much gets thrown at them. You know, a big difference is just some of the big guys that either aren't with the team anymore or, frankly, the guys carrying over that haven't done it. And point number 3, which is the one I want to make most in depth, because I saw this last year. I worked in the minors. They don't teach you different things in the minors to what they teach you in the majors. Like, they're affiliated teams. It's not like Matt Hagen, Buffalo.
Right.
Is, you know, I mean, all credit to him. Buffalo Bisons are hitting really
interviewed
well. The guys
on this
have
very
come
show,
up. Yeah,
Blake.
Seems like a very cool guy. Yeah. Played for the Blue Jays during the 2015 season. But he doesn't just get to create an entirely independent plan of what the Blue Jays coaching and the Blue Jays front office thinks is the right way to hit. They run similar programs, if not the exact same programs, at the minor league level. They run the same pickoff moves at the minor league level. They run the same bunt coverages. You wouldn't have each team just have its own independent strategy, or else it's like the old times when the minor league teams were their own teams and you're legitimately purchasing them when they say, like, we've purchased the contract from the Buffalo Bisons.
Right.
When you're, like, legitimately doing stuff like that. Like, these are affiliated organizations. Every coach was put in place by the Blue Jays. They all have bosses. They're not teaching anything radically different at really any level of the minor leagues, I think, than they are at the major league level. The only things they do is, like, it might be a little more simplified at rookie ball because it's like a very different type of pitcher you're facing. But especially when you get to AAA, almost the majors. Like, it's incredibly close. So I would be shocked if the instruction Davis Schneider got in AAA or Horwitz or Ernie Clement was drastically different than the instruction they get at the major league level.
I will be curious to see what goes on with the hitting coaches, hitting analysts, hitting instructors, whatever you want to call them, because it's not just one guy. It's multiple dudes, right? So if
they brought in some new people this year too, yeah. And they, you know, like,
you probably thought Don Mattingly would have a bigger impact or a more positive impact.
And perhaps. Who knows? Like, yeah. It's so hard for us to tell. I think we've talked about it so many times. Yeah. We don't see what they're doing.
Exactly. And I know a lot of people clamor. I mean, maybe it should be Victor Martinez. Maybe it should be Edwin, right? It should be all of them, right? They should all come back and work. And you know what? Far be it from me, I would be the last person to complain if one or both those guys were full-time hitting instructors. And I've seen them around the club when we're down at the ballpark on the weekends and so on pretty often, and maybe not all the time. And they certainly seem to have decent impacts on the players when they're, as former players themselves, talking to these guys. But I don't know. I on one hand, I do agree with you, because if the changes from the minors and the majors are minor, then, you know, it shouldn't really make a huge difference. But also I do kind of wonder, at some point, maybe a change is required, even if it is simply you make a change and Matt Haig is the Blue Jays hitting coach next year.
I think it's more PR than anything. That's
not because he's teaching anything different, but because maybe it's just they want to listen to someone else. Sometimes that's all it is. Sometimes
it's possible. I mean, Guillermo Martinez was the hitting coach, and Vladimir Guerrero Jr. would have won an MVP if anything but the greatest baseball season we had ever seen happened. You know, and Teoscar Hernandez turned from a guy that Houston was willing to throw into a deal into a silver slugger back-to-back years. So it's just hard for me to know, I will say, exactly what the impact is in those situations. Some more texts coming in. Joe from Midhurst, if it's Midhurst, Ontario, is the home of the former team that I broadcast for, the Barry Baycats. Oh, so go Baycats. But Jays have to pitch their butts off and get some key hits to make it. It would be nice to see the bats come alive. I mean, those two guys, Springer, Schneider, are a huge deal to that. We also had a text earlier, and I apologize, I've lost it a little bit in the mix, but someone saying, well, what's going on with Bo? And it is true. I mean, I think Bo looked a lot better against Boston than he did against Texas. Two teams that I believe his dad played for. But Joe in North York. It's still, to me, it might not even be injury specifically, but he's just such a good timing hitter. And I know that sounds like everyone who can hit is good, but like late quick swings to spray balls to the opposite field when he's sitting on breaking balls and just keeping an even bat plane. You just wonder if two IL stints take someone out of their rhythm a little bit. I mean, it's not easy to end up like back at the spot that you were when you've missed a month. It's not easy to hit that way.
Yeah. Even for, I know people say this about like quote unquote veterans, and Bo, I'm not sure Bo qualifies, you know, from a colloquial standpoint as being called a veteran just because he's such a young dude, even though he has played a number of major league seasons. But for any ball player, for any athlete, not even just baseball, it just takes a while to get back into your rhythm sometimes. I mean, look at Brandon Belt. I mean, this is a guy who has been around for such a long time, and people were ready to DFA the guy. I was probably close to that spot myself at the beginning of the year. And then he went on a tear for much of the rest of the year until now when he's injured, right? So, yeah, I think really it is just rhythm to a certain extent. I like this text from Peter in Toronto. Hey, show Ben, one of the prime qualifications of playing leadoff, a high on-base percentage. So why not bat Biggio leadoff and Springer fourth or fifth? I know they have said for the rest of the season that Springer's going to bat leadoff, but just in a general sense, and we've talked about this, it's not about feelings or what people are used to or whatever. It's about putting guys in the best possible positions and taking advantage of lineups and players being hot when they are hot and not waiting until they cool off. If that is the case, then I don't hate that idea.
Okay? I don't hate it.
I honestly, there are probably better ways to completely optimize the lineup, but I mean, maybe it's Biggio at the top of the lineup. Maybe it's Bo at the top of the lineup who gets on base. And I know we just talked about him struggling a little bit, but maybe Bo is at the top of the lineup and you go from there, and Springer does bat cleanup or bat third or wherever. I really do believe, and I like using the word malleable as I did earlier, I really do believe that the lineup has got to be as malleable as possible, really anytime, but it's more important now with 12 games left.
It is certainly true also that recently Kevin Biggio has gotten on base a lot more than George Springer. For the season, they're separated by 0.03 of an on-base percentage point. Like, it's George 328, Cavan 331, and right. Cavan's going through one of his hotter stretches, and George is going through one of his colder stretches. So I don't really know if they would do that, but it is certainly an interesting thing. I just want to get to one thing really quickly, and then we're going to get to a break because Emmanuel Barbari,
yes.
WFAN pinch hitter, as he calls himself, for the Yankees on play-by-play and CBS radio.
He's a big guy, you tell me. He's 6'5". It's a pretty big pinch hitter.
Huge guy. Made me look tiny in the summer we worked together. But Paul from Perth says, I feel like we have bats on the bench that can pinch hit, but don't feel that we have a pinch runner that can steal a base when needed. Should Cam Eaton, who, if you follow the Bisons, Cam Eaton's stolen 45 bases this year, and Paul, thankfully, given me the note, 45 for 48, too. So he's been really efficient. Be brought up for that late base running insurance. We're missing that. Could be important. Can we spare the spot? Thank you. Love the show. Thanks so much for texting in, Paul. So I don't hate it, but there's two barriers in my mind.
Is he the 40-man?
That's the first and initial barrier.
Right.
He is not on the 40-man roster. So, I mean, you could make moves to put him on the 40-man roster now for the final 12 games of the season, but he can't play in the playoffs.
That's right.
You have to be on the 40-man, as far as I understand it.
Prior to September 1st?
Yeah, it's like August 31st something like that. And so he is not on the 40-man roster, so he couldn't factor in. I do think their best pinch run guys, I mean, I will say, a lot of lineups don't have both Whit Merrifield and Kevin Biggio in them. They're both pretty quick.
Yep.
And a lot of lineups don't have both of those guys and Dalton Varsho in them. So I don't know that they have like a Dalton Pompey, and I do love the utility pinch runner in the playoffs where you just bring him in to cause havoc. It like fairly directly won the Blue Jays outside of Jose Bautista smashing a home run, a series, because Dalton Pompey, you could argue, forced some errors from Elvis Andrus and others. And Mitch Moreland, I think, spiked a ball. But I would love it, but I just don't think they can do it. And I'm not sure they have the spot just because, I mean, maybe it would be like Ernie Clement's spot. When Horowitz could go down when Belt is back.
Correct, yep.
But right. Then there is the chance, okay, that you get Heinemann off if Jansen's back for the playoffs, if they make it.
Right.
Maybe you would slot in Cam Eaton in an Ernie Clement spot, but they can't do it for the playoffs anyway because of the 40.
Because of the 40 man, yeah. It's not a bad suggestion
don't
by
get
any
it
means.
Wrong.
But yeah, it doesn't seem likely for this season. I feel okay if need be asking Kiermaier or Merrifield to be, or Varsho being the ones, or Biggio certainly as well, to be the ones to do that. But don't get me wrong, Cam Eaton 45 for 48 is tremendous.
Phenomenal. And hey, maybe it's something interesting for next year.
Yeah.
I know we're not thinking about that right now, but Cam Eaton has had a very good season, a couple other Bisons too. We are going to take a break, but we'll keep talking state of New York because the New York Yankees and the Toronto Blue Jays have a 3-game series coming up starting tomorrow. We are going to talk to Emmanuel Barbari about what to expect from the Yankees and what the feeling is like. Yankees, not mathematically eliminated, by the way. And in Yankee land, they're always going to believe. But we'll take a quick step aside. He's Show Ali. I'm Ben Schulman, Jeff Azzopardi, Lance Kennedy, and Jennifer Rolnick. It's Jay's Doc Plus on Sportsnet 360, 590, The Fan, across the Sportsnet Radio Network, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Smart takes on the biggest stories in sports. The Fan Drive Time with Ben Ennis. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Jay's Talk Plus on Sportsnet 360, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, the Sportsnet Radio Network, and wherever you get your favorite podcast. Just over 20 minutes to go. I'm Ben Schulman. He's Show Ali, Lance Kennedy, Jeff Azzopardi, Jennifer Rolnick behind the scenes, filling in today for Blake Murphy. He'll be back tomorrow. The Blue Jays will be back tomorrow when they start a series against the New York Yankees, a 3-game set in the Bronx. I mean, every series at this point is about the most important series of the season, but it doesn't get a lot bigger than Yankee Stadium, and the Blue Jays really, really need to go in there and do some damage.
Absolutely. I mean, any game against your division rivals always matter a teensy bit more, which is why a sweep of the Red Sox is fun for a lot of Blue Jays fans. But going into the Bronx, a place the Blue Jays have not always had a ton of success. And right before you go to the Trop, another place the Blue Jays have not had a lot of success. I think this road trip matters. I mean, all the games matter, like you say, but this road trip matters a teensy bit more.
Yeah, and even with the cachet that the Red Sox organization has, I mean, you know, 4 World Series in this century, they've been really good. The Yankees are just different. You know, the 27 World titles, that's I think St. Louis has 12. I think they're in second. Like, it's kind of like a Montreal Canadiens-esque kind of difference between those two teams. It's a bigger stage than you're going to see, and we already know the probable starters at this point. Kikuchi Schmidt, Gausman King, Barrios Cole. And joining us now to give us some more information about that, host on WFAN and CBS Sports Radio, was on the Yankees call of the Pittsburgh series at PNC Park this weekend, and my former broadcast partner with the Chatham Anglers in 2021 in the Cape Cod Baseball League, Emmanuel Berbari. E-Man, how you doing?
I'm doing well, guys. Thanks for having me, Ben. Good to talk to you. And Joe, nice to meet you over the phone here.
Yeah, you as well, Emmanuel. Thank you for joining us today. I always hear you less on WFAN, but more on CBS Sports Radio. I often hear JR throw to you for sports breaks, so I appreciate you joining us today.
Great to talk to you.
That's my little role on CBS. JR talks to me, and I give scores for a couple of minutes.
Well, we got a lot of CBS Sports Radio coming through across SportsNet 590 and the radio network as well. Before we get into the Yankees, congrats on the series this past weekend. What was that like? I mean, look, Veterans Field in Chatham is beautiful, but PNC Park to make your debut, that's pretty nuts.
Yeah, absolutely. Two beautiful parks. They share that in common, Veterans Field and PNC Park. But it was amazing. I appreciate you asking. It was surreal just growing up as a Yankee fan and working on the broadcast throughout the year. But stepping into that role, of course, calling the games a little bit different. And it was a fun series. You know, they gave us a good three games and a lot of really good pitching. But it was a ton of fun to call the games and to do it with Justin Shackle, who's done it all year, filling in for John and a mentor of mine. It was really cool.
Chatting with Emmanuel Berbari from WFAN and CBS Sports Radio here on Jays Talk Plus. Emmanuel, I did want to get pick your brain a little bit on what we have seen from the Yankees this season, and certainly what the Blue Jays will see coming up in this three-game set that starts tomorrow in New York. You know, one guy, I admit I sometimes get caught up in, like, prospect rankings and what will prospects look like when they come to the majors. And two of the Yankees prospects, one we will see, one we will not, have played, I think, at differing levels this year. Certainly Jason Dominguez is done for the year after the UCL injury, but he has played well, also has a great nickname in The Martian, which is just phenomenal. But Anthony Volpe as well, I think, has had some flashes of looking pretty good as a rookie, has some not-so-great flashes as well. I'm curious what you've made of their play as two very, very young Yankees prospects for such a historic franchise.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Dominguez was phenomenal, especially for... It felt like a week we saw him before he went down with that injury. He was incredible, especially coming up at 20 years old. I think it was important, especially because he had really nothing left to prove in the minors after what he did at AA, especially over the final 3 months and about a week in AAA where he hit like 450. So they wanted to call him up and see what he was about. They knew what he was about, but at the big league level. And I thought he was tremendous over that week from a plate discipline standpoint to the power we know he has. Played a really good center field as well. And I think a question surrounding him, will he be a center fielder or will he end up being a corner outfielder down the road? Really looked good out in center field, but now he's down. The Yankees will have to reassess that for next year. Hopefully it's a quick recovery, but I think the good thing on that front is when he's back, I don't think it's going to be like, okay. But you think about it, if he didn't get hurt, maybe next spring training he's competing for a spot and starts the year at AAA if he doesn't win that spot. But I think now with this injury, he's going to rehab it. When he comes back, to me, he's a big league player. And I think he showed that over a week. We'll see how he fares when he comes back. I'm sure it'll take a while for him to just settle back in. We've seen that with position players with that type of injury. But I think really positive, glowing positive from Jason Dominguez, although he did go down. With Volpe, I think it gets lost a little bit because the Yankees called up all these young rookies. He is a rookie. You know, that seems like I'm stating the obvious, but he's been here the whole year. So I think he got a little overlooked with this recent youth movement of all the guys they're calling up. Because he's been playing shortstop every day the entire season. There's only one game this season he didn't start. So he's been extremely consistent and constant there. Now, the offensive consistency hasn't always been there. He's gone through some growing pains. I think he's really taken his lumps at this level, especially early in the season. He recently went through a stretch where I think he started September, I think it was 10 for 55 or something like that. He was in a 10 for 55 stretch, hitting the ball really hard the last few days ahead of that home run to tie the game yesterday in Pittsburgh in the seventh inning. So he's gone through these ups and downs, but I think the way you look at it is he has really plus power for a rookie shortstop like himself. He has the speed. He stole a lot more early in the year. He hasn't stolen as many bases lately, but he's well above 20 stolen bases now. And the constant, I would say, after a few errors early in the year that were head-scratchers, he's been a Gold Glove shortstop. Like, I would be shocked if he's not in that upper echelon of consideration for a Gold Glove this year. So when you look at his value for people who are into metrics, it's actually really good. He may be hitting in the low 200s. So he's got power, he's got the speed, and the glove has been the consistent at shortstop.
Yeah, I mean, you look at Baseball Reference WAR. He is third on the team behind Aaron Judge and Garrett Cole right now in WAR. Anthony Volpe, Aaron Judge is going to be, the guy that the Blue Jays pitchers are looking at most. Blue Jays fans know DJ LeMahieu, Gleyber Torres, Giancarlo Stanton. But you mentioned so many new guys, not just this season, but recently, who are, out of some of the young guys, people that Blue Jays fans should have their eye on as guys who can do damage for the Yankees in this series?
Yeah, at least recently, I would look at Oswald Peraza, who we saw at the end of last year, even started an ALCS game when the Yankees got into a situation with Isaiah Kiner-Falefa. Peraza was the favorite entering the year to win the starting shortstop job before Anthony Volpe had a miraculous spring training and really seized the job. So I think Peraza, who's come up now in a consistent role, he can play anywhere in the infield, maybe aside from first base. I wouldn't put it past him to play first base, but third base, shortstop, second base, he can play it at a Gold Glove, like premium level. But the question has been the bat and the consistency with the bat. Can he be a regular big league hitter, or is he more of a guy that's going to move around the field and you hope you get something offensively? Lately, with more consistent at-bats, the bat has started to really come around, more like the way we saw it in flashes last year. And it coincided, interestingly enough, with he has a leg kick that he likes to use, and he'd kind of gotten away from that when he got called up for a short stint earlier in the season, and he made an adjustment to that leg kick and kind of got it flowing a little bit more. And since then, he's a well above 350 hitter over the last 12 or 13 games, I believe. So Peraza is a guy I would circle for this series if the Yankees are going to do damage. And then the other guy would be Oswaldo Cabrera, who was awesome when the Yankees called him up late last year. And he was supposed to be maybe 70, 80% of the time in left field was going to belong to him entering the year. Didn't go well early in the season. So I think that's why the Yankees, a lot of things kind of went awry early in the year. But that was one of them where they didn't go out and sign a left fielder. But they had a lot of faith in Oswaldo Cabrera. And he just wasn't hitting early in the year. Got sent down. He was up, down, up, down. Now he's back up. And Everson Pereira got called up, who is 22 years old and rocketed through the system this year and has a ton of power. He's dealing with some leg soreness and also hasn't hit the way he would like over the first couple of weeks here. So Cabrera is getting a majority of time in left field or right field now, right field when Judge is a DH. And he's looking like the Cabrera from last year. He's hitting mistakes and he's working quality at-bats over and over again where he's seeing a ton of pitches. So I would highlight, there are a few guys, but I would highlight Peraza and Cabrera if the Yankees are going to pick up a couple of wins here.
Emmanuel, before we let you run, we appreciate you joining us here today. Is it a done deal? Is Garrett Cole the AL Cy Young winner this year?
I would never say done deal on anything, but he would have to, in my mind, he would have to really falter over these final couple of starts to not win the Cy Young. I think he may have secured it for himself in Pittsburgh because early in that start, Garrett Cole, I would say that was 50% of Garrett Cole. He really didn't have his best stuff. He didn't look comfortable out there. He was searching for it. You can sense when Garrett Cole is in a rhythm and on his game, and you can almost immediately sense when, this might be a grind. I thought that was going to be an incredible grind in Pittsburgh, and he still found a way after 50 pitches, I believe, through two innings. He found a way to get through five innings of two-run ball, and he had a lot of traction on the base paths, and it really could have been. I really think it could have been like a six innings. Then not six innings, a four run over four inning, or like four runs over three innings type of start. Found a way to go through five innings of two run ball. ERA barely rose. So, and he leads in all the major categories, and maybe outside of strikeouts and pitcher's WAR, he's leading by a fair margin, I believe. So I think it would take two bad starts to finish his year to even put it into question. But right now, I think he's the definitive leader in the pack.
Yeah, it would take something that, you know, rarely ever happens, like, I don't know, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. 3-homer game, something like that. But when's that happened before? I'm not sure. But, E-Man, really good to talk to you. Looking forward to seeing you soon in New York, and good luck with the rest of the season.
Appreciate it. You too, guys. Thanks for having me.
That is Emmanuel Barbari, host with WFAN and CBS Sports Radio, on the radio for the Yankees this weekend in Pittsburgh. We mentioned it briefly. Incredibly tall human being.
Like, got the pipes. I love it.
Yeah. Like, I mean, maybe, like, I think 6'5 is doing him justice. It could push to 6'6 territory. We had a lot of videos together over one summer where we're standing beside each other, and it was legitimately like, let's stand on the slope of a hill or something like that. Cause, you know, it's not like a major
Shaq
operation.
And Danny DeVito.
We don't have like a good box to stand on or something like that.
That's funny.
But really happy for him. Great guy. And should be a fun series coming up against the Yankees. It's a really interesting team. A couple more small things we want to get into here with 5 minutes left. I know that there was a text or two that had caught your eye, Show.
Yeah, I think there was one, there were a number of them that I liked. This one actually was from Kelly in Calgary about our conversation about the hitting coaches and, you know, whether or not you want to change the hitting coaches in the offseason. And I think you and I are on different pages, you know, different viewpoints on that. And I agree with Kelly's point. Maybe it's not the message, but the messenger. And I think that's kind of what I was getting at earlier about sometimes it has nothing really to do with what they are saying, but like how they are saying it, which is why I think a lot of the time the conversation about like Vladdy, for example, is so complicated, because when Vladimir Guerrero Jr., there's a lot of thought that maybe he has too many voices in his ear. Maybe it should only be one guy. Maybe it should only be two guys instead of five guys. Right. So I also great restaurant. I do somewhat wonder with Vladdy and some of these other guys as well. And again, you're not wrong. You're absolutely 1,000% right that Guillermo Martinez helped this team, and the other guys as well, helped this team hit exceptionally well when they were just tearing the cover off the baseball in 2021. So, like, there's no real substantial reason why it should be different now. Maybe it is as simple as they're all going through slumps. Maybe that is as simple as it is, as annoying and unsatisfying as that answer is. But sometimes maybe it's just you need a change. And perhaps Matt Haig is that guy. Maybe someone else is that guy. Sometimes hitting coach changes don't always work out. Talking about the Yankees, they fired their hitting coach in the middle of the year.
And they're not lighting up.
No. They're not great.
No.
Aaron Judge is hitting home runs because he's Aaron Judge, not because he got some substantially different advice.
And they're a little better because Aaron Judge is healthy.
Exactly.
Like, it's not really anything other than that. Pretty much everyone else on their team, you know, even before his injury, and a scary one for Anthony Rizzo, hopefully he comes back next season and is good, but he was having a down season. Giancarlo Stanton's having like the worst year I can remember of his career. Yeah. I mean, like he's in 193.
Is it wild that I still think of Giancarlo Stanton as a Marlin and not a Yankee?
I thought you were going to say as Mike, because he was
right.
Mike Stanton for a
was.
Couple years there, and
that's
then
right.
he changed it. I have an old Mike Stanton baseball card that I keep, because
so
I think
funny.
It's kind of fun. One other thing related kind of to Marlins, kind of not. Just wanted to get into it super quick, because it's going around baseball today. Tampa Bay Times writer Mark Topkin reporting the Rays are expected to make a major announcement tomorrow, regarding the completion of a deal to build a new stadium in downtown St. Petersburg. And I'm just going to – so there's a lot of implications. We can't get to all of them. This team had strayed away, I think, from the strategy of maybe we'll play half our games in Montreal, because I don't think that made sense for anyone. I think Montreal deserves its own team, and if you're going to keep a team in Tampa Bay, keep a team in Tampa Bay.
Yeah, yeah.
This is interesting, I think, for expansion, because Rob Manfred has said publicly they need to settle the Rays and A's situation before they think about adding, the A's being obviously pretty much departed already to Vegas. There's one thing I really like about this stadium, is that it's 30,000 seat. Considering the Rays don't draw that much, I kind of like it being smaller so that it'll feel more full even when it's not. Two things I really don't like about this stadium. It's still in St. Petersburg, which is half the reason they don't fill. They have been one of the best teams in baseball for a long time. It's like, what if the Senators were like, we're opening up a new arena in the parking lot of our old arena, of the very difficult place
to
get to.
Yeah,
like there's, it just doesn't make a lot of sense to me. And it's still a completely closed roof stadium, the new deal, reportedly. It would not be a retractable roof stadium. And
I don't hate that.
It's Florida. It should be outside sometimes,
look,
right?
Hurricanes like, come through there all the time. You don't want to risk that.
Close the roof. Like, I would hardly say that I understand the architectural ramifications of a closed roof versus an open roof, but I am under the impression, non-professionally at all, that the retractable roof stadiums built after the Rogers Center, like the much newer ones, could stand Like, they're just as good as Roofs at this point. So I'm a little bit bummed by that. The St. Petersburg much more. But I think, you know, you want to draw people in Florida, it's super nice weather. Wouldn't they want to be outside?
All stadiums need roofs.
All stadiums need roofs.
Slap them on all of them. Fenway, put a roof on Wrigley.
But I think they should all be retractable. No roof on Fenway.
That's right. Fenway should be just torn down.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. I will not stand for that. Fenway will live forever and ever. They're on Yankee Stadium 3. Come on. We need at least some.
How did they build the new Yankee Stadium without a roof in New York? Like,
I don't know. They changed some things, but I think there would have been a riot. But really appreciate everyone tuning today to Jays Talk. Plus, Blake Murphy will be back tomorrow. He's Show Ali. I'm Ben Schulman. Thanks so much to Lance Kennedy, Jeff Azzopardi, and Jennifer Rolnick behind the scenes. This has been Jays Talk Plus on the Sportsnet Radio Network, Sportsnet 360, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.